Be advised, I see midway up the World Trade Center tower, heavy black smoke coming out. Also, it seems like heavy damage to the upper portion of the building cave.
Thin Line Believers is a Christ-based outreach for the men and women who walk the thin line between good and evil, order and chaos. Our motto is, our service for His glory. To the police officers, veterans, firefighters, corrections, paramedics, dispatchers, and whoever else may join us, we are so glad you're here.
All right, well, welcome to this week's podcast of Thin Line Believers. Today, I'm excited to be joined by Dan Anderson, who holds a master's degree in clinical mental health from George Fox University. He works out of the Bend area and specializes in stress and trauma, amongst many other things. He is a board member at the Shield in Central Oregon, which is a nonprofit organization which brings mental health counseling and those services to folks in law enforcement and veterans, and tries to do that in a way that is as little as out of pocket as possible. So welcome, Dan, and thanks for being here.
Thanks, Steve.
So if you wouldn't mind just kind of touching on your, you know, your background and where you're coming from and kind of where you're progressing to in the Bend area, just to give everybody an opportunity to hear from you and what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And what you said is accurate. So my degree at George Fox is in counseling, clinical mental health, and my specialty, if you will, is stress and trauma. And in the last few years, I have reached out here in Bend to first responders and veterans, and the way that things have sort of shaken out in terms of how I provide services and how I'm organized, I'll call it, loosely organized, is sort of two different hats. One is I work as a consultant. I think we generally call it a mental health wellness consultant, and I have contracts with public safety agencies where I go to their location and try to help them keep their staff safe, I guess. Safe and healthy.
And well, yeah.
Yeah. So, and then the second half of it is I am part of a nonprofit now that does counseling with, as you say, public safety folks and veterans. And that is individual counseling. So that's separate from the work that I do with the agencies, even though, as you can imagine, there's a ton of overlap. But in one case, technically, I'm working for an agency where when I see folks in my office versus their office, when I see them in my office, then the agency's not a part of the interaction, if you will. It's between the individual and myself or with the nonprofit. Does that make sense, Steve?
Yeah, absolutely. So in a sense, you have your individual counseling section of it, and you've got almost a cumulative or organizational aspect of it that you bring to the organization, so you have the contracts with.
That's exactly right. And those two are, although they're similar and some of the same individuals, or at least folks within the same types of organizations, they are separate. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, on Thin Line Believers, we've talked about stress and not necessarily trauma to a degree, but we've talked about those things more in a spiritual-based approach in the past. And we've had some comments that some of the guys and gals wanted somebody who could bring more of a clinical approach to it as well. And so I reached out to Dan, and he was gracious enough to join us and kind of walk through some of these things and where they come from and how they affect us and how maybe we deal with them. So that's kind of a roadmap or an outline of maybe where we're going to go during our conversation and our time with Dan today. So we had talked, me and you, Dan, just a little bit before in preparation for this. And, you know, you had mentioned that stress for our careers and for us personally come from some different areas. And I was wondering if you could hit on that a little bit for us.
Yeah, absolutely, Steve. So, like I said, I work with a lot of law enforcement folks. And one of the things that's become apparent, both through my experience and also there's plenty of research out there if you're a research person, that speaks to the fact that folks in your line of work have some unique stressors and unique ways that stress shows up for them. And so I can sort of break those down into a few categories because it makes it sort of easier to think about, I think, if we do that. Yeah. So, of course, number one sort of principle here is that stress is cumulative sort of regardless of the source. These things sort of compound one another. And so, you know, folks in law enforcement have all the same stressors as other folks out there in terms of whether they're, you know, financial stressors or parenting stressors, and all those types of things are, you don't get a pass on those because you're in law enforcement. You get all that good stuff.
Right.
And then specific to the job, there's really, the way I look at it is a couple different types of stressors or sources of stress. And the first one is what I refer to as organizational stress, which usually I feel are unnecessary stressors. And so what I'm talking about there are, you know, folks that are in organizations that are going through a lot of change, whether that's in personnel and or, you know, a lot of changes in policies and procedures, you know, frequent changes, ambiguous job responsibilities. So these are, as you can tell, sort of agency dependent. They may be happening in one agency and not in another. Right. And they're oftentimes stuff that, you know, admin is dealing with in one way or another.
Okay.
The other side of the other side of that, and the job stress is the type that I call it inherent in the job, meaning there's no way to get around it if you're going to do the type of work that you're doing. And thanks for doing it, by the way.
Yeah.
So we usually refer to that as that type of stress that I'm referring to. People call it post-traumatic stress. You can call it critical incident stress. And it's different for law enforcement than it is for other individuals. And let me elaborate on that a little bit. So, there's some research out there that says that most individuals in the United States will experience a traumatic event sometime in their life. So they might, you know, just through bad luck, wrong place, wrong time, they may be in, you know, in a bad car wreck, a natural disaster. They could, you know, be a victim of a crime. They're at the bank and somebody robs the bank. Mm-hmm. So that's something that shows up in people's lives maybe one time on average, right? And then these folks will experience some post-traumatic stress, and then given, you know, time and rest and social support and stuff that we can talk more about later, you know, they begin to recover and eventually they feel safe again. Most of the time that happens without necessarily them getting, you know, any kind of professional intervention, because that's sort of the way that we're built as humans, is, you know, to recover and to heal from things, whether we're talking, you know, a broken arm or post-traumatic stress. I mean, to me, they're sort of metaphorical, one for the other.
Right.
The challenge, of course, that law enforcement experiences versus the typical folks we were just talking about is that law enforcement folks often have these types of events that they're exposed to repeatedly, because obviously that's their job on a daily basis. They're they're looking for these types of events versus trying to avoid them.
Right.
Right. So where I was talking about the, you know, the typical folks, and I get in trouble, I'll use something like, instead of law enforcement, somebody like a banker, but then I'll get a banker that, you know, calls me on that. But
right.
Okay, but so let's say, you know, a retail manager or something like that. You know, he'll experience one of these traumatic events or critical events, and he'll heal in the way that I described or sort of simplified, versus the law enforcement person that maybe showed up at that same event. You know, they're going to experience another stressful incident in probably, you know, a relatively short period of time, versus the other individual who it may take them anywhere from 6 months to a year to bounce back, depending on what kind of event it is and sort of their own particular disposition and what their experience is. But so law enforcement folks are having these or showing up for these critical stressful events on a repetitive basis. And so the recovery doesn't necessarily happen completely for them before they're, you know, put in another stressful scenario. So
that quite often, you know, I mean, they could take a break in that if they really chose to,
yes,
you know, to see a counselor or to, you know, work through some tools like we'll give later to kind of interrupt that cycle, right?
Yeah, that would be huge. There's, you know, I think we're starting to see folks in public safety become more aware of that. You know, there's even at the federal level, right? The Department of Justice is now, you know, pushing for more awareness in terms and more effective programs for officer wellness and that type of thing. But it's still very early on from my perspective, and there's still a lot of resistance to taking time off. And in the case that you suggested, Steve, is a lot of folks still think, well, you know, this is my job and this is what comes along with it. And, you know, I shouldn't need to take an extra day off or something like that. So
kind of that old school mentality.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I think, understandable. And I'm going to sort of, I think there's some reasons for that. But again, the other thing that's going on versus the other guy on the street that may be exposed to a single event is that, because, as I said, you folks are sort of out there looking for trouble,
right.
You have this sort of anticipatory thing. And what I mean by that, and I think probably folks are more familiar with the term hypervigilance. That's become sort of a common term amongst folks that are in this work. And so you're always on alert. And that, on one hand, keeps you safe, but it's also stressful on the central nervous system. So that's just a fact. Like I said, that's one of those stressors that's part of the job and inherent in the job, and there's no way to avoid that. Again, it's part of what keeps you safe.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm not going to – I'm kind of a nerd for stress science, but I'm not going to get into – stress hormones and all that kind of physiology with you, but I'll just sort of say that in a nutshell is sort of a, if you took an average average officer, I think that's the kind of things that they're exposed to that can you know, cause them to develop long-term what I call chronic stress. With that comes a range of sort of symptoms and health risks, right? Folks have probably, you can't read a newspaper without realizing now how much stress plays a role in our health overall. So,
right.
Does that piece make sense?
What are some of those? Sorry. Yeah, no, that makes complete sense. But you talked about some of those symptoms that maybe we get, and I know you didn't want to get into the whole physiological portion of this, but maybe some guys and gals that are listening aren't realizing that some of those symptoms are from that, right? So maybe you could just hit on a couple of those, and I know there's probably a huge list of them, right? But maybe some of the more common things that you see, or that research shows as well, that we maybe our reactions and our symptoms that come from these stressors and these traumas and these this hypervigilance, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. excuse me. Yeah, I'm glad you framed it that way, Steve, because there's not a single set of reactions. And if you have, I hesitate to use the word symptoms, because it sounds like somebody's sick, and that's not necessarily the case, but that's what we're used to using. But there's not a single set of symptoms or reactions that says, gee, this individual is doing better or worse than another individual that doesn't have those particular reactions. Things just sort of present themselves differently for different individuals, again, sort of based on their background and so forth. But having said that, so one of the sort of the hallmark stress problems is trouble with sleep. Mm-hmm. And I generally sort of go there first with folks because it's so common, and also there's sort of a paradox there in when I was talking about recovery from stressful events, sleep is one of the best things you can do for yourself. It's one of the things that's absolutely necessary for the central nervous system to calm down and rebound from high stress situation or set of events. Mm-hmm. And yet it is also compromised by stress. Yeah. So, here's just the thing that you need, but you can't get it.
Right.
So that I'd say is somewhere near the top of the list of things I would say folks should watch out for if they, are concerned that they're being affected on a long-term basis. And then, of course, the response I get from a lot of folks is, well, yeah, no, try working, a job that requires, 24/7 shift work, Dan.
Right.
So I don't want to get too far off on a tangent there, but I think that sleep is one of those things that the individual should be aware of, and it's also one of the things that I think a good agency is very aware of and does everything that they can, and it's probably a topic too long for our chat, but I think there are some things that can be done to make the challenges of shift work that you experience more mindful of the stress that people are under. I guess I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's great. And I know we chatted a little bit about compartmentalization and that we are, I wouldn't say pros at it, because there's no such thing, and it's almost a fault to a degree that we lean on and that we almost have to lean on at some times. But maybe if you can talk to that a little bit and just how that applies to us, and maybe that'll open some eyes to some of the folks that haven't heard about that and how that can lead to some of these stressors and all that.
Yeah, sure, Steve. And so that term, again, it's another one that's getting thrown around a little bit. It was originally sort of a psychological term, but now it's something that I think we can understand. We don't need to have a master's degree. So so compartmentalization, we could use other, there's other names for doing the same thing. But so it's really a coping skill, and it's one that is absolutely required for law enforcement folks to do their jobs. And so, again, compartmentalization is an officer, officer's way of sort of delaying their reactions to a situation that they're responding to. Mm-hmm. And so to be sort of more clear on that, that sounded a little vague. So you show up at a bad call, and you know, you and I think the law enforcement folks that are listening will understand this entirely. You know, you can't react to that the way that a lot of people would react to that, because otherwise you'd never get your job done, right? There are folks, there's folks potentially falling apart emotionally on your left and right at that scene. But you can't do that, right? You need to continue to work. And so it's very much a, professionals would say that's an adaptive thing or a functional thing. It's a positive coping skill. It's something you're doing to allow you to function. Mm-hmm. The reason I want to point that out is, you know, folks will say, well, you know, how do I not do that? And, you know, I don't want you to not do that, because that's, again, something that you do to keep yourself safe and also to, you know, to do the job that you're doing to serve the public. So if you can't compartmentalize, you're probably, I've had conversations with folks before about whether that's something that can be learned or if you're sort of born with that skill. I think you definitely get better at it through practice, and then, and that's sort of the bad news, right? So the bad news is coming, Steve. So, you do that, and you're able to set aside that emotional reaction. And of course, then, you know, not only at the scene, but then you've got to go and you've got to write reports, which are, you know, could be potentially ways of sort of reliving, certainly remembering, you know, what happened. So you're sort of having to continue to function and continue to sort of live in that event without reacting, without having an emotional reaction. So that's what it looks like sort of on a good day. And the problem is really not with that. That's all fine. The problem is that, and I use the metaphor with folks about sort of delaying that reaction and putting in their box. So they got a big cardboard box, and the box is out in the garage, and I come home from the day after having been to that call and written the reports, and I just set that in the box out in the garage, and I don't deal with it, because now I'm going to be with my family, right? So, and then the problem comes with, you know, we've got the next call and the next call and the next call. And as I say, over time, people actually get better at this compartmentalization thing, and so the box starts to fill up. Some guys have said, you know, the box has been way full for a long time, I hear, for a lot of folks. Yeah. So, and then there's this idea in theory that, okay, well, you know, a professional person like myself will tell you, okay, you know, what you need to do is you need to sort of experience and process your reaction. You need to not delay it indefinitely. You just need to delay it until you have the right time, right?
And when is that, right?
Exactly. And the time, as we talked about, you know, with stress in general, the time doesn't come because the next call is coming. But the other piece, which I completely understand, is, you know, if you're effective at being able to delay that reaction, and then somebody says to you, well, now I want you to haul it out of the box and experience it, you know darn well that's not going to be comfortable.
You don't want to do it, right?
Right, and no, who the heck would, right? So right. I don't blame anybody for not wanting to do that, but also hopefully maybe, you know, through some education, folks might realize you know, that it can be sort of a pay me now or pay me later kind of thing, I guess maybe is the way to look at it.
Yeah, for sure.
I guess the thing I'll say about that, the compartmentalization piece, to sort of end is, it seems to me, and I don't, this I haven't necessarily seen a lot of research on because it's kind of a detail, but based on my experience talking with folks in my office, it seems like that for most folks is not a problem that they see early in their career.
Yeah, for sure.
And I can imagine a couple of reasons for that, but I'm just sort of guessing. One of them is I think that as we get older, we change physiologically and in other ways, and including me, and we get away with things in our 20s and 30s that we're not able to get away with later. Living on a lack of sleep, for example, is another one of those. So I think that may be one of the reasons why I wind up with, a lot of folks that are senior guys that are, hoping that they're able to continue with their career and make it to retirement. Every once in a while, there's a exception to that rule, and I'll get one of the newer folks that's experiencing these same problems. But it seems to be, if I had to count it up statistically, it seems to be more of a problem the longer you're in the job, if maybe I'll just put it that way.
Yeah, no, I could see that for sure.
Yeah. I think, any questions on the compartmentalization piece, or does that sound?
No, that sounds great. I mean, it's something that I'm sure any of us listening, I mean, I can think back 2 weeks ago where I had an incident that, like you're describing, where the family's falling apart around you and you can't. I mean, you can't. Right. You have to do your job, and you have to try and keep things together for the investigation and those things, even though that may be triggering some things for you as well, right? I mean,
right.
It's that line that we have to walk that can be very difficult at times when maybe something's reminding you of an experience that you've had personally, or like you said, there's just been that cumulative effect of dealing with these things over and over and over and not taking the time to stop and work through them.
Yeah, and you asked about symptoms, and I would say probably in this part of the discussion, a couple things come to mind, and that is because we're talking about sort of delaying our emotional reactions or avoiding mm-hmm. them. A couple of things that I see when folks are struggling with this, usually, as I say, after a period of being really successful at it, mm-hmm. is that one of two ways it comes out, and it's sort of opposites. Sometimes folks will say, I'm not sort of, and this is my language, not a direct quote, but say they're not really able to experience a full range of emotions that they're used to. And I'll use a direct quote, and somebody gave me an example and said that, they know they love their wives and kids, but they don't feel it in the way that they used to feel it. And I think the thing that makes sense to me there is we're sort of training ourselves by this compartmentalization process. We're training ourselves, not to experience emotions.
Yeah, not to feel.
Yeah, not to feel. So some people use the term numb. And so it's hard to, apparently, it's hard to do that on a a narrow basis without it sort of bleeding into other areas. And mm-hmm. so then we're so used to turning it off that, for some folks it could become difficult to turn it on.
Right.
Now I've also heard what sounds like the opposite of that, and that is folks that, again, have been very successful at being able to sort of delay and defer emotions or avoid, they start having them sort of show up. I don't want to say inappropriate times because there's no appropriate time, but an unusual time, I guess I'd say, right?
Right.
Rather than having a reaction to something that's happening right now, you're driving in the car and you know, you start having reactions that you're not anticipating. You're getting emotional when there's quote unquote nothing emotional going on around you.
Right.
So that's sort of the converse. But both of those, I think, are sort of symptoms of the same thing.
Yeah. And when we talk about emotions, I mean, that can be a range of emotions, right? I mean, that could be anywhere from sadness to complete rage, if you will.
Rage.
Mm-hmm. Just depending on what that incident kind of brought and what you stuffed down, right?
Yeah, correct, correct. And this will probably sound too familiar to you as well. I hear that oftentimes will come up, you know, if you're patrolling a particular area where, you know, you've got a memory of an incident that occurred.
I mean, not everybody. I'm fortunate enough, and I know my listeners and our listeners have heard me say this before, but I'm fortunate enough to have a wife who's in line of work as you and provides me with a lot of these tools when I'm struggling. So I kind of have that built in, but, you know, not a lot of these guys and gals that are listening have that. And so I was wondering kind of in closing, if you could give them some tips, some tools, maybe some direction of where to go and what to seek out. I know that there's a lot there, but maybe you can give them a few tips and tools of where they can go to help with this.
Yeah, absolutely, Steve. And in fact, it's, you know, simple but not easy kind of thing. Mm-hmm. A lot of the same suggestions apply to sort of in a prevention mode, if you will, right? Keeping yourself healthy before there's a problem. A lot of the same suggestions apply when you are really having a hard time. So I'll just sort of buzz through a few. And probably a lot of it will sound familiar. So based on research, exercise is like at the top of the list. So physical activity. Second one that comes to mind is, and this sort of the paradox here, is sleep. And sometimes exercise and sleep start to compete with one another if you have a short schedule or a difficult schedule.
Right.
But again, important. This is very much, if you're getting the sense, this is very much sort of a physical thing as much as it is a psychological thing or something in your mind. Stress is, it starts off psychological, but it ends up in your body. Mm-hmm. So consequently, nutrition is important. And I'm not a nutritionist, but I think all of us sort of know when, you know, we're eating a half gallon of ice cream a night, that's probably not a good idea, and it's certainly not going to help us with stress. I would say moderating in terms of alcohol consumption. For some folks, that's a big deal. For some, it's really easy. But I think it's, you know, if we find that we're using alcohol in order to get to sleep, that type of thing, then we probably want to take a look at that. So there's a practice I'm not going to talk too much about because we could talk too long, but some folks may have heard of the term mindfulness. Mindfulness is not just meditation. And it's something that is, you know, you practice like exercise. So you think about it, you could think about it as sort of exercise, in this case, exercise for your mind. Folks can Google that. If you want more information on that, they could contact me. Or as I say, if you Google it, Google mindfulness, you'll find a ton of stuff. So social support is a big deal for a variety of reasons, and it's challenging because, as you pointed out, Steve, everybody doesn't necessarily want to talk to their wives about their experiences on the job, and nor do they necessarily want to talk to their neighbor.
Right.
So, but social support is a huge deal, and it doesn't always have to be the type where you're, you know, bearing your soul. It's just a question of not isolating and becoming an individual that is, you know, spending too much time alone. So whether it's going fishing or going to dinner, all of that is important. But I would say, you know, the quality of those relationships is more important than the quantity.
Yeah, for
sure. Couple more. So spiritual, your spiritual life is, and sort of making sure that you maintain that is important for dealing with stress. And that's now also, in the research. So, you know, for some folks that's church, and, you know, I would say, you know, just showing up on Sunday morning may not be enough. You may, when I think of sort of spiritual concerns independent of your belief system, usually involves, you know, sort of being a part of something that's bigger than you.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that, you know, you start a podcast. Wait, that's already been done.
Right, we did that.
So last thing on the list I'll say is professional help. And two things I'd say about that. One is not everybody's trained for the same type of work, so you can't just go to somebody because it says counselor on their business card.
Right.
Sorry to say, because I've just had too many folks come in here and tell me stories that aren't helpful. So, or of situations that were not helpful.
Yeah.
So I would look for folks that have experience working with first responders,
mm-hmm.
if possible. Certainly those that are trained in dealing with trauma. But I think there's starting to be enough attention, you know, to first responders that you ought to be able to find somebody that has that experience. And I'm recommending that, you know, agencies, whether it's through admin or through, you know, employee associations or unions, that,
mm-hmm.
you know, they come up with a list of community folks that, you know, that do have that experience, so that you can see a professional when you want to. And then the last thing on that is I'd say, you know, you don't have to be sick or broken to get professional help.
Right.
You can do that as a way of staying healthy and preventing problems, even though that's, you know, not necessarily the model that's been common in the past. It's becoming more and more common. So that's my list. Yeah.
I like it. That's good. Okay. Like Adam and I have talked about, I mean, I've gone and seen counselors, and I'm not just talking about speaking to my wife at home. You know, I've gone out and seek for professional help. Adam has. I mean, we're very open about that and how it's helped us. So I'd encourage everybody. I mean, find something in that list that will benefit you and that can help you work through these things. You know, a lot of the departments, I know Salem and I know Oregon State Police and a lot of the departments have trauma teams and these lists, like Dan was talking about, that can help point you in the right direction and be some support on that end too. So, like you said, Dan, things are changing, but we're far from where we need to be. And, you know, the statistics show that when, you know, the suicide rate of police officers outweighs the line of duty deaths. I mean, there's something obviously that still needs to be worked on, and we need to be able to suck up our pride and work through these things to benefit us going forward and the officers that'll come after us. So,
yeah, Stephen, I appreciate what you're doing. I think that's great.
Yeah. Well, thank you. So with that, Dan, if you can let these guys know where they can find you, maybe an email address, a website, that kind of thing, in case they have some questions for you.
Absolutely. So it's www.shieldcentraloregon, like it was one word, .org. And absolutely, so if you go there, then you'll see there's email address and phone number. And, you know, regardless of whether you're in the Valley or where you are, you know, if you want to send me an email and you've got some information or questions, or you want to give me a call, I'm available.
Awesome. Well, yeah, seek out Dan, seek out people in your area. Most of our listeners are from Oregon, but we've got some from the East Coast and around the country too. So find something that'll work for you and some people who can help you through what you're dealing with. And so again, thanks Dan Anderson for your time and being gracious enough to join us.
Great, Steve. Have a good day.
Yeah, thanks.
All right.